Hi, I'm Carmen LaBerge. Here's the podcast for Connecting Faith. Enjoy the conversation.
Real conversations about how we live out our faith every day. Welcome to Connecting Faith.
Welcome, friends. I'm Carmen LaBerge. This is Connecting Faith. We're here to reconnect the eternal with the everyday and seek to make those connections between the headline news and the mind of Christ that would equip us to enter into the conversations of the day filled with grace and truth. So that's really my goal. So what are you thinking about? What are the conversations of the day that you are challenged to get God back into? That's really what I'm hoping to do on Connecting Faith every single day. You can follow me on Twitter at Carmen LaBerge. You can read my blogs and other ministry information at reconnectwithcarmen.com. You can also communicate with me via email. That is carmen@myfaithradio.com. All right, friends, this story from The Atlantic is probably not one that you have read. However, it is one that I think you should read. And so the nice thing about The Atlantic is you can actually read their material online. It's not behind a paywall. And so I would encourage you, if you are interested in the conversation we're about to have about reality and the end of reality, I invite you to check out the article by that name, The End of Reality at The Atlantic. Why am I talking about this? Well, last week we had a conversation with Abdu Murray, the North American head of the Ravi Zacharias International Ministries, RZIM. And the conversation that we had is, you know, how do we as Christians, how do we present ourselves as convictional Christians, as people who are certain about truth and certain about reality? How do we present ourselves in a post-truth culture, in a culture that has very much given up on the idea of an objective truth? They're very interested in personal truths and people living out their, you know, their own truth, but not interested in truth as that which accords with reality. And so if indeed truth is that which accords with reality, then knowing what is real and what is not real is going to be essential to knowing the truth, and certainly to speaking the truth about the matters of the day. And so let me just ask you, how do you know the truth, and how can we differentiate truth from lies? Well, there are maybe at least two answers to that question. One would be revelation, right? You and I as Christians would recognize the truth by what God has revealed through his word, but also what God has revealed through creation itself, right? The book of Romans talks about our being without excuse, that creation itself bears enough witness to the reality of God and his glory that we're without excuse to at least believe that he exists. Now, we're not going to come into a saving relationship with Jesus without the revelation of Scripture helping us understand who Christ is. But in terms of the general revelation of creation, there's enough. God's got enough going on with the sunrise and the sunset and everything in between to help us discern the reality that he is there. The good news is he has also spoken, and we have his truth revealed in his word, which is the Scriptures of the Old and New Testaments. If you are not a God-believing, God-fearing person, and I ask you the question about how do you know truth from lies, how do you differentiate between those two things, you are still going to have to give me an answer that is somehow related to that which accords with reality. But how do I judge that which accords with reality if I don't have the standard of an unmoving truth, you know, as my true north, as my compass? Well, a lot of people would say, well, I'm going to judge it by my senses, by what I experience, by what, you know, experientially through my five senses, maybe even through my sixth sense of a gut reaction. And so then let me ask you this. Let me just ask it this way. Would you know a picture or a video of your own child if you saw it on the internet? What if the face of your child had been harvested from your Facebook page and then superimposed onto another picture or video in such a way that the world was led to believe that your child was somewhere they were not, doing something they had not done with people they had not been with? Now, what if instead of your child, that was your face or the face of your pastor or a political leader or your spouse? Well, that is actually the point at which we have arrived in our culture. We have now arrived at what The Atlantic describes as the end of reality. And that is because we now have to us available in apps on our phones the ability to make it seem as if people were in places they were not, doing things they did not do with people they were not with. Now, this is not an attempt to frighten you. Well, maybe it is a little bit. Not really a full-blown attempt to frighten you away from technology. Each of us and all of us need to become equipped to deal with a world where we are very likely going to be misrepresented in ways that we cannot easily defend against. And that, I think, is where we need to, sort of the reality we need to reckon with. The end of reality as we have known it, and now in this post-truth culture, the representation of us and our ideas in ways that that are frankly a misrepresentation. Here's a quote from the story, and I think this sums it up. The internet has always contained the seeds of postmodern hell. Mass manipulation from clickbait to Russian bots to the addictive trickery that governs Facebook's news feed. That is the currency of the medium. It has always been a place where identity is terrifyingly slippery, where anonymity breeds coarseness and confusion, where crooks can filch the very contours of selfhood. In this respect, the rise of deep fakes are these pictures and videos that we're talking about, is the culmination of the internet's history, and probably only a low-grade version of what's to come. Okay, and again, the story in The Atlantic is the end of reality. I commend it to you. I actually commend it to you in conversation with people in the next generation, because where you and I, if you're like me, you are not a millennial nor a Gen Z person. You are of a slightly older age. And so the reality that we will be dealing with is that our images will be manipulated by those who are much younger than us. But mostly they're probably going to be suffering the manipulation of their own images by others their age. And so I do think that this conversation is a good one to have with young people so that we can say, okay, if you're not going to be able to trust your eyes, you already can't trust your ears. If we're not going to be able to trust what we see, then what are we going to trust? In what and in whom will we place our trust? What will we lean on in terms of an unmoving, unshakable, certain truth? And so we are going to, I think, be led to a great opportunity to say to people, look, who you truly are rests in something that the world actually can't see, but also cannot manipulate. And that is in the certainty of who God is. You are created in his image. You are designed on purpose and for a purpose. You have a God-ordained future ahead of you, indeed a future filled with hope. God has already planned in advance the good works he intends for you to do, and he very much desires to be in a relationship with you through which he can then not only bless you, but bless others, use you in his gospel advance in this generation. So I think that's the positive invitation in terms of identity, in terms of truth that's wound up in all of this. But it's a little bit of a very frightening dystopian reality now in terms of the fact that many of our kids now live more on the internet and social media than they do in relationships with us and in real relationships with one another. So what is reality if you live online or on social media? And we have arrived at this dystopian reality of what's called deep fakes. All right, friends, I'm going to have to take a break here in just a moment. And so let me invite you to visit me at reconnectwithcarmen.com. Let me also invite you to visit myfaithradio.com. If you've got a prayer concern, great opportunity to share it there. When we come back, I'm going to be having a conversation with Jed Medefend, and we're going to be talking about the reality of kids who need forever homes. So I got to take a quick break. Don't miss my conversation with Jed Medefend, Christian Alliance for Orphans. You are listening to Connecting Faith. I'm your host, Carmen LaBurge, and we'll be right back. Give me your eyes for just 1 second. Give me your eyes so I can see everything that I keep missing. Give me your love for humanity. Give me your arms for the brokenhearted, the ones that are far beyond my reach. Give me your heart for the ones forgotten. Give me your eyes so I can see. Yeah. Friends, I'm excited to be joined today by Jed Medefend. Jed is with the Christian Alliance for Orphans. You can find them at kafo.org. That's C-A-F-O.org. They're on Twitter at Orphan Alliance and on Facebook at Christian Alliance for Orphans. Jed, welcome to Connecting Faith.
Thank you, Carmen. It's great to be with you.
So this is a huge, we're talking about a huge issue area. I think it's safe to say that you're going to mess with our lives as soon as we start talking to you, because it seems to me as if there's really no area of the Christian life that is not somehow impacted or affected by the conversation that we are about to have. So let me sort of set up the conversation with you for my listeners this way. Jed is actually a person who likes to see Christians have their lives turned upside down. Because he sees God's heart reflected in adoption and foster care and service to orphans worldwide, and he wants all of us to have the transformative experience of engaging in those ministries. And so when you check out CAFO, C-A-F-O.org, you are going to recognize that not only could you be a person that could affect and really radically transform the life of an orphan, but that you could have a life radically transformed by engaging in the ministries that we're about to discuss. Through CAFO, more than 190 organizations unite to share initiatives. They have conferences, and we're going to talk about one of those that's coming up very soon. And again, we're talking about the Christian Alliance for Orphans, CAFO.org. Jed, let me start with this, if it's okay. You served in the Bush administration as special assistant to President George W. Bush, leading the Office of Faith-Based and Community Initiatives. So I'm wondering if, since we are where we are in our life together as a nation, if I could just invite you to reflect on the life of Barbara Bush and the legacy of the Bush family at the intersection of faith and politics.
That's a great question, Carmen. Yeah. You know, right towards the end of the administration, those of us who had served President Bush, this was just internal. There was no public cameras with us, but just down in the basement of the White House, we all put together cards and pieces of paper where we wrote what was most significant to us about President Bush and what we most appreciated about him. And the one, there was a lot of words, but the one word that kept showing up again and again and again was character. Just those who served with him, who knew him well, and who saw who he was when the camera was out of the room, saw a man of character. And that was rooted in his Christian faith. You know, he had his own journey where he had struggled with alcohol and then really made a major life change. And so even though, you know, he would be the first to look back on his presidency and say there were some decisions I made that were the right ones and others where I made mistakes in the real-time moments, but I don't think anyone who knew him well would say that there was a lack of that good, strong, integrous character. And I think the same could absolutely be said of both of his parents, President Bush and also Barbara Bush, just a character, a grace, and a wisdom about them that is very rare to find in the political sphere in this age or any age.
So your work in the U.S. government seems to have really fundamentally changed the way our government engages on the kinds of issues that we're talking about today. So, I mean, the Lord really used you. I hope you perceive it that way. Those of us on the outside looking in certainly perceive it that way, that your work in the Office of Faith-Based and Community Initiatives, I mean, actually changed the way our government works. So I'm wondering why, of the myriad issues that you encountered when you were in that position, why you chose to invest your life in this particular arena?
I appreciate you asking that, Carmen. And, you know, there's probably a lot of reasons. God has lots of threads that he always brings together in any life. But I know for me, you know, one of the biggest is just when you encounter precious kids that are growing up without a mom and a dad, it is really, really hard to forget what you have seen. You know, we often say, and the kind of the data and research show this, that the children growing up without parents are the most vulnerable beings on our planet. Whether you're talking about a kid in an orphanage or on the streets in another part of the world, or children in the foster system in the U.S. bouncing from home to home to home, that those kids are incredibly vulnerable. And I think that's why God the Father speaks so consistently throughout Scripture, calling his people to step into that space as his hands, his feet, his welcoming home for kids that don't have families. And so that was, as you noted, one of many issues that I worked on in the Bush administration. But when the end of that time came and an invitation to be a part of this Christian Alliance for Orphans work was there, I just thought, what a privilege it would be to pour my days and sometimes my nights into this work. And I still feel the same.
So let's just tell people what the Christian Alliance for Orphans is. And again, friends, you can find it at CAFO.org, C-A-F-O. My conversation partner is Jed Medefend. So, Jed, tell us what the Christian Alliance for Orphans is.
Yeah. Well, you could describe it two ways. You know, on one level, it really is a connecting hub for Christians from across the U.S. and really all over the world who care deeply, who love Jesus and care deeply about vulnerable children. And they want to come together to really grow and learn how to do this wisely and well. You know, it can be very complicated, obviously, when you're wading into broken situations around the world, when you're coming near to struggling families here in the U.S. that may be dealing with addiction issues or poverty or other things. And so to support one another, to encourage as foster parents, adoptive parents, nonprofit leaders, advocates, churches, a big part of it is just supporting and serving one another. But really, on another level, what it does is it brings together many of the very best and most respected organizations, Christian ministries that are in this field to join together in united work. We like to use the phrase, we want to leave our logos and egos at the door and join in a vision that's bigger than any one of us could do alone. And so the Alliance really enables all these organizations that in many ways would be natural, you know, competitors with each other. They're trying to raise funds and they're doing different work in lots of different places. And instead of them working in competition or in isolation from each other, they're working together in shared initiatives that ultimately help the church be God's answer for orphaned and vulnerable children.
So, Jed, what kind of numbers are we talking about? And let's have that as a two-part conversation. What kind of numbers are we talking about here in the United States? And then what kind of numbers are we talking about globally? And as soon as I say that, you know, my listeners recognize that every one of these numbers that we're about to talk about is a precious, vulnerable child. And so, you know, kind of bring us up to date on the data.
Yeah. So in the U.S., there's around 437,000 kids in the foster system at the moment. That's an estimate. It's always changing. But it's, you know, around 400,000. That number had actually been going down for a number of years as a result of the opioid crisis. Just in the last couple of years, it's begun tipping up again. One thing that'd be important to note is of these, you know, roughly 400,000 kids, about a quarter of them are waiting for new parents. Their parental relationship has been terminated by the government, and they're considered waiting children. They need a new mom and a dad. The other three quarters, they are temporarily removed from their homes. It's been considered unsafe by the child protection system. And so what they really need right now is a temporary loving home that can provide consistency and nurture with the prayer and hope that their parents can get their lives back together and ultimately that child can return to those parents. So you see those two kind of categories, both of which so much need God's people to step in either as temporary homes or as permanent homes, as adoptive parents.
So let's look at the four, what I consider the four aspects of Christian Alliance for Orphans. Let's talk about foster care, adoption, family preservation, and then when we have the global orphan ministry conversation, you can bring us up to speed on the numbers there.
Absolutely.
So let's just start with, you know, you've touched on foster care, but let's touch on adoption. Where are we at on that front in terms of CAFO and in terms of church or Christian engagement?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's really there's some very encouraging data that shows that Christians are dramatically more likely to adopt than folks who are not motivated by faith. And so you really see Christians, and in particular evangelical Christians, stepping forward at rates somewhere around 5 times the average of the American population, willing to receive kids into their families and, you know, share their names and the inheritance rights. I mean, this is a full identity as part of a new family. And of course, you know, as you know, Carmen, this is not just the story of the child who needs a family. This is our story, right? This is what God did for us, welcoming us into his family, giving us his family name, sharing the inheritance rights of Jesus Christ with us. And so, you know, when Christians do that, they're just giving a small reflection to the way that God first loved us.
All right. So on that adoption ministry front, I know that the Lifeway research that that you posted actually on your blog a little bit earlier this year, you know, gives us a little bit of hopeful news, but it also, you know, I think holds open the door for greater church ministry. So we'll return to that in a minute, because let's talk about family preservation. What is that, and why is it one of the four aspects of CAFO?
Yeah, well, you know, so often when the Bible talks about widows, it speaks of orphans and widows together. And so it's, you know, while certainly there are many times where a child in isolation needs help and does not currently have, you know, any surviving parents or any parents who are willing or able to be involved in their lives anymore. But often you're in a situation both globally and in the U.S. where there is a parent, and most of the time it's a mother, but sometimes it's a surviving father, and they are on the verge of disintegration. And so our call there, we really believe very strongly as the Christian Alliance for Orphans, that if we can preserve that family, or if it's been broken, if we can reunify that family, that's God's best for that child. If there's any way that we can wrap around the mother and child or the father and child and enable them to stay together and to thrive together, then that's our first call. So that's what that's all about.
Friends, my conversation partner is Jed Medefend of the Christian Alliance for Orphans. You can find out more information at CAFO.org. That's CAFO. Jed, before we go to the break, let's touch on the global orphan ministry. What kind of numbers are we talking about, and how would CAFO have us engage?
Yeah. Well, you know, globally, the numbers are somewhat slippery, but the basic number that often is acknowledged is there's about 15 million children who've lost both their parents. And, of course, many of them have aunts and uncles and grandparents that are able to care for them. And there's many other kids who haven't lost their parents, but the parents are unwilling or unable to care for them. It's not a safe situation. But often we focus on that number, 15 million kids, who need the church to step in and say, you know, God has called us to be his presence for these precious kids, his protection and care that God intends the family to provide. When that family is not there, when parents are not there, then the church steps into that. And, of course, there's a lot of ways that's expressed. It's certainly one of those is Americans supporting organizations that are doing great work around the world, and many of the member organizations of the Christian Alliance for Orphans are doing just that. But also, we very much want to build up the local church in each of these places. And ultimately, we feel like the very, very best scenario is when local Christians who share God's heart and who are concerned for the kids in their community step up and say, hey, we will be God's answer for these kids, adopting locally, fostering locally, mentoring, helping in the family preservation efforts with widows and orphans there locally. And so whenever we can as CAFO, we want to come alongside those individuals and organizations locally that are doing that work as well.
All right, friends, we got to take a quick break. But when we come back, I'm going to continue my conversation with Jed Medefend of the Christian Alliance for Orphans. You can find out more about it at CAFO.org. That's CAFO.org. When we come back, we're going to be talking about an upcoming event that they're having in Dallas, May 9th to the 11th. And we're going to also talk about how your church can become connected and engaged. I'm Carmen LaBerge. This is Connecting Faith, and we'll be right back.
Where love takes you in. With the beat of a heart when love takes you home.
All right, friends, welcome back to Connecting Faith. I'm your host, Carmen LaBerge. My conversation partner this afternoon is Jed Medefend of the Christian Alliance for Orphans. You can check it out at CAFO.org, CAFO.org. Jed, welcome back to Connecting Faith.
All right, thank you, Carmen.
All right, so let's jump in and tell people about the CAFO Summit that's happening in Dallas, May 9th to the 11th.
Yeah, well, you know, Carmen, even though I'm part of one of a large team that organizes and works together and tons of volunteers, I look forward to this as just a highlight of the year for me. And it's just an incredible gathering where people who care deeply about Jesus Christ and care deeply about children come together to both encourage as well as equip one another to do that work wisely and well. So there's foster parents, adoptive parents, there are people serving as missionaries around the globe. There are also people from about 35 countries who are serving locally within their own culture. So Guatemalans and Kenyans and Russians. And so it just creates this incredible dynamic of God's people from around the world helping one another to understand how to heal children when, for instance, there's been trauma. How do we walk that difficult but beautiful road towards healing with the children, understanding the latest brain science? How do we build an effective ministry in a local church to wrap around and support foster and adoptive families? If we're a pastor, how do we encourage that? How do we work better with the global church to help build local solutions in countries around the world? And so, anyway, for me, you know, there's the main stage, and there's amazing speakers, and there's great music, but ultimately the essence of it is as you get into those workshops and you're learning about these things, and then you're connecting with others who just share this passion. It is a beautiful experience.
So let me just tell you, folks, if you go to the KFO.org website/summit, you're going to want to go. I roamed around on the website, and I started checking my calendar. So it's May 9th to the 11th. It's in Dallas. It's the KFO Summit, and it's your opportunity to learn about and then engage in this vast array of ministry, not just here in the United States, but around the globe, seeking to actually be the church, mobilize the church in response to our calling to serve the most vulnerable, which would be widows and orphans. In this case, very focused on orphans through the Christian Alliance for Orphans, but also on widows through the family preservation part of what KFO is doing. All right, Jed, so you recently posted a blog at KFO.org providing guidance for people engaging in short-term missions. I found this fascinating. I don't think we often stop and think about the vulnerable children we are going to intersect with and how we might either help them or hurt them by what we say and what we do and how we behave on short-term mission trips. So from KFO's perspective, from your own personal perspective, what are some things that Christians engaging in short-term mission trips this spring and this summer need to keep in mind?
Yeah, it really is an important thing, Carmen. And, you know, somewhere it's estimated that around 2 million Christians a year go on short-term missions trips. And, of course, those of us who have been a part of that know how transformative they can be. I look back to my early years in life, and I would say that mission trips, a couple different ones, played a big role in the trajectory of my life. And they can be transformative for the communities that are served as well. But they also carry real risk of doing harm. And I think that's especially true if vulnerable children are the folks that we are intending to serve, intending to benefit. And so, you know, the guidance that we created really helps people, whether church missions pastors, organizations, or individuals, to be more thoughtful about, you know, what is really going to be the best for vulnerable children in the context of short-term missions. How can we avoid harm and maximize the good we do? And I think this is something for us to take very seriously as Christians and really seek to do this wisely and well.
All right, friends, and again, that blog is posted at kfo.org, C-A-F-O.org. I want to talk for a minute, Jed, about the way you guys are really working to mobilize churches. Your National Church Ministry Initiative, I really think that it's, first of all, it's unique, and it helps us think more holistically about, you know, how do we respond not just to one individual traumatized child, but how do we actually become equipped as the people of God to be a family of faith, not just for that child, but for the family who might take that child in? So talk with us about the National Church Ministry Initiative of KFO.
Yeah. Well, you know, Carmen, as the Christian Alliance for Orphans, we believe very strongly that the local church needs to be at the center of the equation. And that's a couple of reasons. I mean, I think that's God's intent. And the reason it's God's intent is because this is not a road to be walked alone. You know, when we open our lives and our hearts to kids who have known great hurt, we're going to taste some of that hurt with them. You know, they've experienced the world's brokenness and abuse and neglect and all manner of evil. And so if we're saying we're welcoming you into our heart, into our home, then we're going to experience some of that difficulty too. And so we really need a community walking the journey with us. And you know, of course, when that happens, it is such a beautiful expression of what the church is supposed to be. I'll just give you a personal example of this, Carmen. A little while back, our foster agency called my wife and I and said, hey, we've got a little preemie baby who needs a home this afternoon. Would you be willing to take him in foster care? And, of course, we were so excited about that. We said yes, but our youngest child at the time was almost 5 years old, and so we didn't have any of the things you need for a newborn baby, right, let alone a preemie. But what was wonderful is even as we were scrambling to make sure our home was all ready, people in our church heard about this and started showing up with, you know, bags of clothes that would fit a preemie and diapers for a preemie and butt cream and a stroller and all these and meals for that evening. And that continued for the next, we had the little guy with us for 8 months. And throughout that time, our church was walking with us. And it had two huge benefits. One was that we needed this help. I mean, it really would have been difficult for us to do this without the help. But even more importantly, I think we felt like, hey, we're not alone in this journey. You know, there's certain things that are hard. There were sleepless nights. There were other very difficult things. But we knew that God's people were with us, people from our church. And I would say anyone who's going to consider getting into adoption or foster care or other ministry to hurting kids and families needs to have that local church wrapping around them.
So I have a number of families in the church where I attend, and I'm aware that they not only have some of them foster children, but many of them, we actually have sort of an adoptive climate in our church is the way I would describe it. But my husband and I are not, you know, like presently in a position life-wise to bring a child, an additional child into our home. How could a family like ours serve the families of our church who are fostering kids and who have adopted both here from the United States but also globally? What are the needs of those families that we would not know exist?
I'm glad you asked that, Carmen. And that's, you know, we often say at the Christian Alliance for Orphans, not everyone is called to adopt and not everyone is called to foster. Not everyone's called to be a mentor, you know, any more than everyone would be called to be a pastor or everyone would be called to serve in missions in Africa. But every one of us can play a part in the pure religion that James describes, you know, in being as a community God's place of welcome for kids that the world has forgotten and pushed to the side. And so, you know, just as I described, personally, there were, you know, families that would bring meals, families that would run errands, families that found out about physical needs that we had, whether for clothing for this little guy or diapers. So those things were invaluable. There was a retired woman named Lorraine who said to my wife, hey, I want to do your grocery shopping for you. And so she would just get the grocery list and every week would bring the groceries to our house. And that was a huge gift to my wife who, you know, had five kids at the time. And then, but I could go on and on. Babysitting is huge. And so, you know, whether a retired person or a teenager who's responsible, babysitting can be huge. But the list goes on because really, you know, people can use their specific skills as well. I know there's an orthodontist in Colorado who actually provides free orthodontic care to all the kids in families that are fostering, both the foster children and the biological children in that home. I also know of lawyers who do use their skills for that. I actually met a guy who's into NASCAR racing, and he actually put some messaging promoting the opportunity to foster on one of his cars. And so really every one of us can play a role using the unique gifts that we have. I would encourage people to be bold. If you know of adoptive family or a foster family, you know, go up to them and don't just say, hey, if you ever need anything, give me a call. Say, hey, I would like to do this or that for you. Is that okay? Or, hey, can I bring a meal next week? Or tell me about your, you know, what's the biggest challenge? And then hone in on that and be kind of aggressive and barge in there and do some good.
I love that. I love the invitation to be assertive, because I do think that there are times that, you know, well, I guess, you know, if they needed something, they would ask. And you and I both know that's just not true. That's not true of us. And so why would we expect it to be true of someone else? All right, friends, let me remind you again that the CAFO Summit is May 9th to the 11th in Dallas, Texas. And you can find out more about it at cafo.org/summit. Again, we're talking about the Christian Alliance for Orphans, and we're talking with Jed Medefend. Jed, before we let you go, and thank you for being so gracious with your time today, we have talked on this program with folks from Key Ministry and related to, you know, how how local churches might engage families whose kids have trauma in their background, and that is acted out over the course of life, but it's very invisible to most of us. Mm-hmm. Talk with us about the kind of trauma that kids who are orphaned carry with them.
Yeah, and that's so important, Carmen. And one thing that we always seek to remind of is that, you know, adoption and foster care, these are beautiful, beautiful reflections of God's heart. They're reflections of the gospel story. But we got to remember the gospel story includes nails and thorns as well, right? It's a very costly journey that Jesus went on to draw us into his family. And so we need to understand, if we're going to choose to mirror God's heart in that way, then we're kind of inviting some of that same costliness. And I think what you just described is one of the biggest facets of that. It's that the children who have known pain, whether through abuse, severe neglect, if they've spent time on the streets, if they've spent time in an orphanage, then very likely they have bear deep wounds from that. We call that trauma, and there can be physical aspects of that, but often deep emotional wounds. And so it's important to, you know, if we're going to be coming close to that, whether as adoptive or foster parents, or I would say an important way to also serve is as a Sunday school teacher, or in other ways, if you're supporting these families, if you can understand some of the basics of trauma and attachment and the importance of the path to healing in that, that's really important. And so, of course, these are deep waters, Carmen, as you could imagine. But I would say that it's really something where, as the church comes to understand these things, both as adoptive and foster parents, but also those around them, we are able not only to bring deeper healing to children, but ultimately we're able to be the church, right? Because the church is God's place of healing for the broken. That includes all of us, and for these kids in a very special way.
So, Jed, one of my dearest friends in ministry is a pastor in Pennsylvania, and this now goes back like 20 years. But he was engaged in efforts to build some facilities in Sierra Leone for children who had been orphaned there. And as you know, that was, you know, 20 years ago, a really serious crisis in that region.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And when he was over there, I mean, no intention of adopting, no intention of, I mean, that was not what he had in mind, but called his wife back here in the States and said, "I think I've met our daughter." And so the process began to get to the place where they could adopt this little girl. And as you know, it can be very, very complicated. And over the course of many months, eventually it appeared as if it was going to happen. And the director of the then orphanage called him, and it happened to have been Christmas Eve, and said, "There's a problem." And they said, "Well, what's the problem?" And so they gathered the family. He's got a bunch of kids. Gathered the family around the speakerphone, and, you know, "What's the problem?" And he said, "Well, there's a boy. She has a brother." And they had been separated in the bush when their parents had actually been killed. And but this brother had been identified. And so Dean looked at his kids, and he had a young daughter at the time. And he said, "Well, you know, family, what are we going to do?" And she said, "You're going to get our brother and our sister."
Mm.
Like, there's just no question in their heart that, right, if their sister had a brother, then they now have a brother.
Yeah.
And I think that the testimony of that family over the course of my life has been really profound, because they have been a model for me personally in how it is you bring very traumatized children into your family, and how they change everything. And yet how, in the midst of being God's family, and a redemptive presence and reality for a child, it forms us as Christians, and it informs the world about who we really are as redeemed people. So thank you so much for what you're doing through the Christian Alliance for Orphans. Thank you for being with us today on Connecting Faith. And let me direct people again to the website, CAFO.org, CAFO.org. Jed Medefin, thank you so much.
Thank you, Carmen.
All right, friends, I got to take one more quick break, and then when we come back, we'll be making the connecting point. I'm Carmen LaBerge. You're listening to Connecting Faith.
There is no one like our God. There is no one.
Carmen LaBurge. Welcome back to Connecting Faith. Indeed, there is no one like our God. There is no one like our Savior. And we are in the world to share that good news of God's goodness and greatness and the power of his love and the power of redemption with other people. And so you and I both know that the greatest need of every human being is to know not only that God exists, but that God very much wants to be in a redeemed and restored relationship with them as their Father. That you and I would be the people, as agents of God's grace in the world that he so loves, that we would actually be the people communicating to other people that there's a place at the family table for them. The theology of adoption is strong, and it is real. You and I know, as Christian believers, that we have been adopted into the family of God's love through our brother, Jesus Christ, through our elder brother. And I wanted to share with you a testimony of a colleague and a friend of mine. Her name is Amanda Duvall. And she has shared her family's adoption story on reconnectwithcarmen.com. And I just thought that this might be a nice way of sharing with you today. So Amanda says, through the imperfect example of earthly adoption, God allows us to witness the perfect beauty and love of what it means to be spiritually adopted into his family. This has been a powerful and tangible picture in my personal life, and why November for her happens to be a particularly special month. So it was on National Adoption Month 19 years ago, maybe 20 years ago now, that they experienced in Amanda's family what they call Gotcha Day. And it's the day that they brought home her sister, Mariana. In Amanda's words, in reality, Mariana had become my sister months earlier. My dad picked me up from gymnastics practice and said, well, you have a sister. Mariana had legally become a member of our family even before she was physically with us. Then when she was 18 months old, she arrived in Milwaukee, Wisconsin from Romania. The homecoming was both joyful and painful. The hurt and brokenness Mariana had experienced in her short life traveled with her across those thousands of miles. She did not immediately connect to our family, which was a difficult shock for us, even though we had been told that attachment is not easy nor ever guaranteed. The process was more painful for my 14-year-old brain, and I couldn't understand why my sister was still acting like an orphan. Thankfully, there was a second day in our adoption story that outshines the Gotcha Day. It came 9 years later. It was days, weeks, months, and years of patience and care and tears working on behalf of my parents that things began to change. So it was late summer in Wisconsin. She remembers packing her room to return to college. She remembers her dad being outside mowing the lawn. And then she could hear her little sister Mariana shouting out to him through the screen that was in the window, trying to get his attention over the roar of the lawnmower. And she could hear her little sister, then 10 years old, gleefully crying out, Daddy, 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 shouting at the top of her little lungs, trying to get their daddy to look up to her in the window. Amanda says, I could hear the delight in my sister's voice. It was one of those instances where you can picture a smile on someone's face just because of the way they spoke. She was practically gleeful. She knew her daddy would love nothing more than to hear her voice and respond to it. Something miraculous had happened. She was no longer an orphan, but a beloved daughter. She'd been living like an orphan for a very long time, fearful and untrusting, though she was in a position of being a daughter that had been secured for her years ago. This contrast has come to represent something even deeper, something spiritual for me, says Amanda. How often do we live as orphans, even when we are really daughters and sons of God? How often do we worry like those whose future is unsure, when our position and our security has been bought and paid for by a perfect Father? It reminds me of the passage in Galatians. Paul is writing to a church attacked by a false gospel, false teachers trying to persuade the new Christian Galatians that they needed to keep up with all these regulations and rules in order to be considered part of the family of God. And Paul addresses them with urgency and passion. In Galatians chapter 3, he says, O foolish Galatians, who has bewitched you? It was before your eyes that Jesus Christ was publicly portrayed as crucified. Let me ask you only this. Did you receive the Spirit by the works of the law or by hearing it with faith? Are you so foolish? Having begun by the Spirit, are you now being perfected by the flesh? Amanda says, Paul is practically shaking the Galatians. He's pleading with them to see the truth. He will not mince words because this matter cuts directly to the heart of the Father. Their salvation was through God's provision of grace alone. Why are they now acting as if they need to do something to earn it? Well, my friends, why were sons and daughters living like orphans? And why do we do the same? By doing so, we reject the gospel with our attempts to earn a place in God's family, a place he freely gives. We start to tiptoe around God as if carefully approaching him might be a way to win his affection. This is not of God. God is a father who loves to hear from his children. We can shout out in full confidence and joy, just as my sister Mariana did that summer day from her window. Daddy, Daddy, I'm over here. And he is pleased when we come to him. Amanda says, if you doubt it, consider this. God sent Jesus, his perfect son, to make your adoption possible. When the fullness of time had come, this is from Galatians 4, God sent forth his son, born of a woman, born under the law, to redeem those who were under the law so that they might receive adoption as sons. And because you are sons, God has sent the spirit of his son into our hearts, crying, Abba, Father. So you are no longer a slave, but a son. And if a son, then also an heir through God. Adoption changes the way we view ourselves and the way we view others. We do not shut the door behind us on our way into the family of God. In fact, it's the exact opposite. We want to extend the grace that we have been given to others. And so let us live into this reality as the sons and daughters of the King, no longer orphans, but fully adopted into the family of God, fully secure in his perfect love, extending to others what we in turn have already received. Friends, I'm wondering if you have an adoption story, if you have a gotcha day story, if you have a story of a person who is no longer an orphan. Maybe you have your own story of what it means to come to realize who you are as a child of God, come to be adopted into the household of God as a full member, as a full son, a full daughter. I'd love to hear those stories. You can email them to me. I'm Carmen at myfaithradio.com. You can always call and leave us a message at 877-93-FAITH. If you hit the number 2, you get the opportunity to make a recording. So that's 877-93-FAITH and the number 2. We always love to hear from you. We also always want to be praying for you. And so you can share your prayer requests on the myfaithradio.com website. And you can always, again, you can always email me. I'm Carmen at myfaithradio.com. What's your adoption story? How did you come to be a part of the household of God through our brother Jesus the Christ? What does it mean to you to be a full heir of the kingdom of heaven? Are you living still as an orphan, even though you know that your place in heaven is secure? If so, then let me remind you today that Christ has already done all that's necessary for you to be fully accepted by the Father. And he fully loves you and fully claims you, adopted into the fullness of his love. And maybe today your family is in a position to extend that kind of forever family opportunity to a child in need. Let's be mindful today that of the nearly 500,000 kids across the country who are in foster care, a full 100,000 of them are looking for a forever family today. There's 100,000 kids who need a home. If one family in every third church would take on that opportunity and that blessing, we would have, there would be no more orphans in America. Orphaned no more. All right, friends. I'm Carmen LaBurge. You are listening to Connecting Faith. I would love to connect with you. You can do so at reconnectwithcarmen.com. You can also do so at the myfaithradio.com website. Let me encourage you today, if you have not done so already, to consider all of the opportunities for you at the My Faith Radio website. We've got all kinds of resources available to you. And if you're new to Faith Radio, we want to send you a welcome packet. You can get that at the myfaithradio.com site as well. Hey, the Ministry of Faith Radio is all about bringing you closer to Christ and making your life better and helping others experience new life growth and transformation. And so we want to invite you to invite others to join us here at My Faith Radio and certainly every day on Connecting Faith. That's all we got time for today. I'll see you right back here tomorrow on Connecting Faith. I'm Carmen LaBurge. Have a great day and God bless. Thanks for listening to this conversation from Connecting Faith. These podcasts are available because of listener support. You can make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend to grow the impact of Connecting Faith. Also, take a moment to subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player and never miss a conversation.